People for adults and teens, beginners and up. Snowfarm.org. Hildene, the Lincoln Family Home, Manchester, Vermont, featuring a 1912 Christmas in the historic home for the month of December, open daily year-round, 9:30 to 4:30. Hildene.org. And Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, sales, service, and repairs. LEXIVAC.com.
Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today. Rich Guthrie is back to help answer your questions about them. Rich is a veteran birder, a former NCON specialist, and former compiler of the Catskill, New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Lots of calls always happen when Rich is on, so get in line now, 800-348-2551. It's 1-800-348-2551. Or you can tweet us your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMC VOXPOP. You can also comment via Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show. Nice to see you again.
Hey, good to be here, Ray.
So we are getting to that time when the annual Christmas bird count takes place.
Yes, Christmas is coming and the bird count is, they're all sharpening their binoculars and getting ready to get out.
All right, so clear this up for me. Now, I'd never been on a bird count. I don't know how these things work, but how do you avoid counting duplicates?
Well, you start with one.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Okay, good. Yeah. And you go from there. What it is, you count everything in sight once over, and the way the count areas are set up, people are put into different sections so that there is not the reduced chance of others coming into your area and seeing the same cardinal and counting that guy or gal again. Mm-hmm. Then you move on. You try to hit as many spots, and we have a lot of veteran Christmas bird count volunteers who go out, and they know their turf. They know their territory. So they go around and make sure that they don't double back and go into the same area again where they might run into the same group of birds.
So, but I mean, there's nothing stopping a bird. In other words, Rich is in Section A, I'm in Section B. I say, oh, there's a cardinal. And then that cardinal says, you know, I've had enough of this. I'm going into Rich's section.
Yeah, right.
And then Rich counts them.
Yeah. Well, the cardinal's not likely to do that.
No.
But some of the other birds do. We've had some very fascinating instances where a bird has shown up in other areas. But, you know, those are pretty obvious.
Well, yeah.
Let's hope that they can be picked out of the crowd. For example, I wasn't there that day, but my son was on a count down on Long Island one time. And a group of pelicans, white pelicans, which are huge critters, a flock of about six of them, as I recall.
Yep.
And they flew along the coast. And you know, group A, so, hey, six pelicans, whoop-de-doo. Group B, hey, look. And it went on down the line. About six different counting parties looked up and saw this flock of, you can't miss them, big white birds.
Right.
Pity on the group that missed them, because they were going to get a lot of razzing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why do a bird count? What information, why is it important to do that?
Well, there are several very good reasons. And first of all, it is fun. I mean, you have to redefine the word fun when you're talking about going out on a December or January morning when it's the snow is flying, the temperature is hovering in the teens, and you're getting up before dawn and going out slogging around in some open field with the wind blowing in your face and the tears coming out your eyes. That's fun.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I guess. Yeah, well, let me tell you, it kind of is. It's a challenge. It's gets you out there. Meet people, the people that you're familiar with and some new people.
Yeah.
The afternoon, the gathering in the evening where you compile all the notes and you do give the group that missed that something a little bit of razzing. You do brag about the stuff that you did get. But then more importantly, let's go back and look at the big picture.
Yeah.
This count has been going on for more than 100 years. And we've had the opportunity of assessing the population dynamics of the wild birds in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, there's all sorts of studies and information that you can gain from that. You know, there are limitations. It is mainly conducted by amateurs.
Right.
And they're out there looking high, low, left and right. And they get together in the evening. And, you know, there are some tall tales that get shared.
Yes.
Some of them are believable. Some of them are not quite so.
Yeah.
And some of them are in between. But nonetheless, it all gets thrown into a big soup bowl, stirred around. And in the end, what you end up with is a picture over 100 years of obvious differences, changes, things that the environment has evolved or changed over the time. Bird populations have increased, decreased. There are some obvious facts that you can gain from this information.
Yeah.
And as we go on, we're becoming more and more sophisticated. So you don't have to compare this last year's count with a count taken 105 years ago and say, whoa, look at this.
Yeah.
There are, you know, you're gonna be dealing with changes that affect the reliability of the information.
Right.
Better binoculars, cameras, video, documentation, and skilled and more people afield.
Does this dovetail in any way with the new online database at Cornell, for
Absolutely.
Instance?
Absolutely. Yep, you do. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's now my pet friend.
Okay.
I strongly endorse what you mentioned is what we call eBird.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to Cornell University website or eBird.org on the internet. It is an internet-provided program.
Right.
And you can go out in the field this morning and tap in a few bird sightings, and it will go into that database, and it will be available for any of the users that might want to assess that information.
Okay.
And also, you can find out from what other people have been seeing. So if there's something good going on, or let's say over in the next county, or if you're traveling cross country, and you want to find, you know, take a lunch break at a spot where you might find some interesting birds, you just tap into your eBird database, and sure enough, you'll find that park with the pond with that puddle of ducks.
But what stops people from, now I see for the Audubon bird count, sort of, it's easy to sort of vet what you see. But online, if Ray Graff goes and said, well, geez, I saw a penguin in my backyard yesterday, is someone vetting that information before it goes online?
Absolutely. It won't go out there until something like that won't go out there until we've had a chance to take a good hard look at what you're reporting.
Yeah.
And we don't let anything slip through.
Okay, there goes that idea.
Oh, yeah, nice
All right.
try.
All right, well.
We'll check on you.
Okay.
But we do it in a gentle fashion and make sure that you're not mistaking a pigeon.
All right, for a penguin. Very good. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We go to the phones, and Nady and Beckett, you're on.
Oh, hi, guys. I wanted to ask a two-part question about cardinals. I've noticed cardinals up around my bird feeders for the first time, and I've lived here for 12 years, and I understand that they have not been up before because of the climate, because it's too cold. That's my first question, and I'm wondering about that. And the second question is that they're very timid, and they come to the feeder, but then they run right away. Is there anything that I can do, any suggestions for how I might feed them? To make them feel more safe or
Okay.
whatever.
Rich?
Well, do you know any hymns?
No.
No.
Cardinals like hymns.
No. Right.
I'm sorry. The thing I can suggest about approaching them is just let them be. I mean, there ain't no change in their behavior. They have to become acclimated, accustomed to you, and it's not that they will become friendly. Well, they'll just become used to you being around. And, you know, some of the other birds are more, I don't want to say aggressive, but let's say assertive in their ways. And that way they will stand their ground longer as you approach the feeders. And some of them are just plain, well, again, I hate to use the word ignorant, but they just don't know any better. You're just another friendly creature in the environment, and they're going to let you approach closer than your normal backyard birds would otherwise. The siskins come to mind about that, the pine siskins. They will stand on the feeder as you're filling it, and the chickadees are familiar in that fashion. After a while, the cardinals will become more accustomed to you. I have them flying up onto my porch and spending the night in the eaves, in the rafters under the porch. So
nice.
They kind of know where to go. So they now, about the first part, there's been a whole population shift, and this is one of the information pieces that we've gotten out of the Christmas bird counts over time. There's been a whole list of birds that have expanded their range northward.
Mm.
Typically southern bird species like the Carolina wren and the tufted titmouse and the cardinal and the turkey vulture. And the list is, you know, some 30 birds species long, not only birds, but butterflies and some plant species and insects have also expanded their range like that. So the cardinal is just one of the participants in that parade. The reasons why that's happening, well, you have to look at climate change. You know, and we won't get into the causes of climate change because that's where the debate begins. The fact that there is a change ain't debatable no more.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
And if you're scoring at home, that's two times Rich has said ain't in this particular segment.
So oh, is that right?
That's a new record.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll work on that.
That ain't right. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Tell you what, Zach, let's take a break, and then we'll get back to Tom and Dennis and your calls as well.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artists Shops in Rhinebeck and New Paltz, featuring holiday gifts, stocking stuffers, picture framing, and fine art materials for students, professionals, and the public for over 30 years. RhinebeckArt.com. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor. BlueBonnetDiner.net. Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, offering Christmas trees, wreaths, kissing balls, roping, greenery, and their own fresh-cut winterberry branches and gifts for home and garden. Windy Hill Farm, Inc. And Proctor's, presenting the Christmas music of Mannheim Steamroller. December 10th at 8 p.m., proctors.org.
One 800 348 2551 is the telephone number. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds and some rare ones making their appearance, eh?
Oh yes.
Oh, well, I don't know much
Can
about.
Can I join
it.
You?
Yes, please. Feel free to chime in, Rich, about the rare birds that are coming.
Yes, right. So, in the area, you know, it happens every year that someplace, somewhere, something will show up that doesn't belong in that backyard, that neighborhood. And this year is no exception. I didn't say ain't this time.
No.
No. I'm going to hold it. Stick to that.
All right, fair enough.
Broke the record once.
Yes.
So here we go. With down on Long Island not too long ago, a bird that has never before been seen in New York State showed up in a park in Queens.
Yeah.
And got a lot. Well, first of all, it went, I don't want to say unbelieved, but talk about vetting. This thing, people really tried to believe that this was real.
Yeah.
But it was very elusive and escaped all notice for quite a while, several weeks, till some fella got down and got a photograph of it and put it out online. And sure enough, it was a Virginia's warbler.
And that has never been seen?
Not in New York it has. And in fact, I don't recall. I think it has. It's from the Southwest. It's from Arizona, Southern Colorado, that area of the
and
world.
How did it find its way to Long Island?
It didn't find its way. It just ended up here. You know, it didn't want to be here, but there it is. These things happen. The birds get disoriented for one reason or another, they end up out of their range.
Yeah.
But this is what bird watchers, you know, the serious listers like to find. And they'll go out, as I did. I went down there several times in an attempt to find this guy or gal.
Yeah.
Finally did, but it was hard work. I mean, this little bird knew where to hide and did a good job at it.
And there was only one?
Oh, sure. It's only the one. Well, you know, I have a theory that there's probably a dozen other Virginia's warblers around New York and Massachusetts. It's just that you need to see it. And we had dozens of the crack birders of New York State surrounding this small patch of park in New York City. and we're going for hours without success and going home after hours without success. That's how elusive this little warbler was.
So how was it eventually found?
Oh, because sooner or later it comes up for air, you know, and it's got to, you know, perch on a branch someplace, and yeah, three people are standing there and says, oh, there it is. And
with cameras,
20 people.
Hope.
No.
All right.
I mean, we this thing was just like a split second, and, you know, a moment of reality sets in, get the camera, bird gone. And by, you know, then 20 people are all of a sudden clustered around that branch, and, you know, the thing is gone and won't be seen for another few hours or days.
So, I mean, you're sure then? I mean, this is not a situation of self-fulfilling prophecy, of a bunch of people looking for something. They see something fleetingly and say, oh, that's it. We found it, boys. Relax.
That happens. We know that happens. A little group psychology out
right
there. Yeah. And there's also the phenomenon that we like to call the Patagonia picnic table effect.
I don't know what that is.
Okay. Patagonia, Arizona, has a roadside park with a picnic table. Somebody found a rare bird there one day.
Yeah.
And the word got out, and birders came in and started looking for the rare bird and said, oh, there it is. Oh, and by the way, there's this guy over here, and there's that guy over there. And then more people came and showed up, and more rare birds turned up. So this effect of bringing the crack birders into a locale will result in better eyes finding stuff that was already there but overlooked or perhaps not recognized.
Very interesting.
So anyway, so this the Virginia's warbler was in also in that very same park. Talk about the Patagonia picnic table effect. There was a painted bunting that showed up.
Okay.
A week or so later, and now that has been eluding observers as well. But the Virginia warbler, which had disappeared for maybe a week's time, had reappeared at a different part of the park.
Okay, so different people saw this bird at different times.
Yes.
Okay, so we can be pretty sure it was there.
Yes, and with digital photography now, word gets out and the verification can come. Just yesterday evening, I received word of a Western tanager.
What's that?
In our capital district.
Okay.
Tanagers are a wonderful, colorful group of tropical birds.
All right.
We have one species in our area, the scarlet tanager.
Uh-huh.
That just to the south of us, they have the summer tanager. And out west in the mountains, they have the western tanager. One of these is at a feeder in the Greene County area. I went down there this morning and got some photographs of it. We're going to put it out there on the internet. And sure enough, it was a western tanager.
Mm.
And I suspect once again that there's probably a few other western tanagers somewhere in the Northeast. Some of them are at nowhere near a bird feeder.
Yeah.
And a few of them may be in backyards. This is where eBird comes in very handy. You can tap in western tanager, and you could be sure one of the reviewers,
mm-hmm,
will be contacting you saying, are you sure about that penguin, Ray?
Well.
And then we'll find out whether you got it right.
All right. Before we go back to the phones, let's take a couple from social media. Tom at Saratoga Tom on Twitter asks, what northern birds visit this area in the wintertime, and where can we see them?
Good question, because what's happening this year, we're having an unusual incursion of northern bird species.
Yeah.
The finches and the crossbills and the grosbeaks are on their way into town.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happening this year. It happens periodically as the food crop up north fails and the birds have to expand their range to find food. This is what they're after. And we have a large number of northern birds coming into the area. So what you have to do is find the habitat that these birds like. Open fields for snow buntings and longspurs, which come down from the Arctic. Pine woods for the crossbills that like to feed on pine cones. They use that nifty bill that they have to separate the cones like a parrot and pull out the seeds. And siskins, well, if you have a backyard feeder going and have thistle seed going with the goldfinches feasting on the thistle seed, then the siskins will be right behind them, and as well as the red poles that will be coming in as well.
Hmm.
Evening grosbeaks, again, another backyard feeder bird. I hear there's a number of them around this year. And so the prospects for a good, what we call winter finch year, are good.
Okay. Now, Brendan on Facebook says, I'm just reading it, doves make the best pets, tame from birth. Discuss. Go ahead.
Yeah, they do. And doves are a popular pet.
I thought you weren't allowed to keep a wild bird as a pet.
Well, some of the wild birds are permissible. And they're native migratory bird species are illegal as pets.
Yes.
There are imported bird species that don't come under that regulation.
Yeah.
They may be. Now, I'm not all up to date on the federal and state regulations,
yes.
But there are restrictions. But doves, certain turtle doves and spotted doves and the like can be kept as pets, and some people do, and some of those get away, and it will set some of the bird watchers off in a frenzy as they find, some sort of a strange dove flying around the neighborhood.
Okay, so Brendan was right on the money then, and let's go back to the phones. Tom in Greenville. Tom, thanks for waiting.
Oh, my pleasure. I wanted to tell my once-in-a-lifetime bird story.
Okay, wait, go ahead.
I was 12 years old. I was walking through a glen in the woods with another boy. So, in other words, there are less trees in this area because it goes along a stream, and we're taking the shortcut through the woods. We're walking along the glen. We're talking to each other. We're not paying attention to what's in front of us. Finally, we hear a whooshing sound, and we look in front of us, and I can see it to this day. There was this gigantic pair of black talons with needle points attached to this gigantic gray owl.
Uh-huh.
And it was, we didn't see it till it was right on top of us. And it was going so fast and coming right at us that what it did was at the last possible minute, it buzzed us, it veered, and it went and it sat on a bough of a tree. Now, this all happened literally in a split second. It happened so fast that I saw the whole thing. We didn't even start to react and close our eyes and hit the dirt and slap our hands over the backs of our necks. We didn't even start to react till this bird was already perched on the bough looking at us. That's how fast this whole thing happened.
Well, an enlightening moment for sure.
Yeah.
And I suspect you were probably near its nest.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, we figured it out immediately. We knew what we had unwittingly done.
Yeah.
And it just sat there on the bough looking and blinking at us, and we went back out the way we had come. What the experience actually brought to me is that I don't think people have any clue as to the actual size of some of these birds and as to the actual power that they have. I mean, again, the size of the talons on this bird and their needle point sharpness were just amazing.
Well, thank
you. You had to be there.
Yeah.
Well, thank goodness you own a squirrel.
Yeah, right. And Tom, that's a great description. Thanks a lot for the call. Seth at Firefool on Twitter asks, recently I saw a turkey vulture in the Berkshires. Is this likely or something else? Bald head, neck, long neck, eating roadkill.
Yep. Turkey vulture.
It's
another
common,
one of those, right in line with the Cardinals and Carolina Wren and the rest of that crowd.
Okay.
They're new to the area. They should be leaving soon. They migrate away during the winter, but they'll be back in the spring.
Okay, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dennis, you're on with Rich Guthrie. Hi, Dennis.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good.
Quick question here. I'm having a problem. I don't know if that's a problem or not. I feed the birds outside. I put suet out with some sunflower seeds. But the price of wild bird seed has gone up so much, I'm trying to, finagle the pricing and doing it right. So I'm just wondering, I have chickens also. Could I give the birds cracked corn? Would that be to supplement the sunflower seeds?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I do, and the birds will love you for that.
That's great. See, I needed to know that because it's ridiculous the price of what I see out there. It's just unbelievable.
Sure. I agree with you. And, crack corn draws attention to from the blue jays, the mourning doves, and a lot of the sparrows. So, you're doing them a favor by doing that. Crack corn is a good source.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Hey, you're quite welcome, Dennis.
Dennis, thanks a lot. And cream corn is good, too, right? No? Angela in Orange County. Angela, you're on.
Hi. Rich, I am calling from Orange County. where a pheasant preserve was just established next door, where they come and hunt DEC-raised pheasants. And then guys come and hunt them on a release kind of situation. And what I've got is pheasants running up and down my road and wandering through the woods to my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, I've read up some research that these pheasants probably won't survive long, particularly since they're sitting by the road, in this climate. But what I wanted to know is there something I can feed them? Is there something I can use to attract them? Because I think they're lovely. And is there something I could build to give them a roost to hang out?
Well, the roost part probably won't work.
Okay.
But the food part, well, crack horn.
Crack horn.
Yep. Unfortunately, a lot of these pen-raised, game farm-raised birds
right.
don't recognize that sort, that food.
Okay.
They're used to pellets that they get spoon-fed to them.
Oh, okay.
And some of them will catch on and will start eating some of the roadside weed seeds.
Right.
Others will learn that if you have crack horn out there for them, they'll come and find that and learn to like it. They'll watch other birds feeding on it, and they'll come and check it out. And aside from that, you have an interesting bird for your backyard list.
Yeah.
Oh, they're gorgeous. And the other question kind of sparked by one of the previous callers was, you said something about wild birds not being legal to keep as pets.
Mm-hmm.
If I were successful in attracting and feeding these pheasants, am I in trouble for, stealing, but
no.
Since they're on my property.
No.
And B, keeping a wild bird as a pet.
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay.
Pheasants do not come under that international Bird Treaty Act.
Yeah.
I have to go back over the regulations about releasing imported birds, but you're not releasing them. All you're doing is feeding them.
I'm catching them.
And kind of like befriending them there in
harboring.
The backyard.
Harboring.
It's Angie's home for wayward pheasants.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Feel free and enjoy them. The crowing of a pheasant is one of those interesting sounds out there.
It really is. Yeah. Is there a call I can buy to call them?
No. Well, there are. You can, there are things. But, you know, get an old Studebaker and blow the horn.
Very nice. Hey, Angela, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye.
800-348-2551.
1-800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Ellen in Sand Lake, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking the call. My question is, a couple of times when I've been out early evening, late afternoon, and I'm accustomed to seeing groups of Canada geese flying over, every once in a while I'll see just a single one.
Mm-hmm.
And my question about that single one is, why is it making the sound? Because I thought that the woo-woo-woo sound that they make is to communicate with one another. And if it's all by itself up there, what's that all about?
Well, he's calling to see if he could get a response from one of the other ones. He's probably looking for another group of Canada geese to move in with. So
really?
he'll be, you know, going around honking away, and if he hears a response, he'll check it out and say, hey, howdy there, neighbor.
Are they okay?
Well, yeah. Geese are gregarious. He belongs with a group.
Uh-huh.
And for one reason or another, this one got separated.
Yeah.
In time, you know, by flying around, he'll team up with another small flock of Canada geese.
Oh, so I shouldn't worry. It has happened at least two times, maybe more this fall.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's the same one or probably not, but I don't know.
Well, it's hard to tell them one from the other unless they have. some of them, we've been doing some mocking of Canada geese over the years, and you can distinguish individuals like that.
But if they're flying up in the air, I don't know.
No, you're right.
Yeah.
You're
right. All right. Okay. Well, I won't worry then. Thank you.
Okay.
Ellen, thanks
thank
a
you.
Lot for the call. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds, but once a month we go to Carl in Clifton Park. Carl, you're on.
I'm 66 years old, and in all my life until a few years ago, I never saw pileated woodpeckers.
Okay.
And now I've seen them. The first sighting was in quite a wild situation, but more recently in populated areas. So just a curiosity as to whether the population had been down or decimated for some years, or they weren't necessarily indigenous to this area. Is there really an increase in the population, or is it just that I'm seeing more of them?
Well, actually, all three of those and then some. What's happening with the pileated woodpecker is that the environment is changing, and years ago, when a lot of the forests were cleared for farming, the pileated woodpecker, which likes more mature forests, were pretty well decimated from the extirpated from the area. They just didn't have habitat sufficient for their population. Over time, woods grew up suitable for pileated woodpeckers, and they moved back in. And then they've also become a little more tolerant, a little more people-friendly. Well, friendly is probably not the operative word, but become tolerant, and they will nest and be closer to people than they might have been in the past. So they're learning. They're moving into areas where they might not have been before and staying put rather than being spooked out by interference. And then also people are becoming a little more observant. And the bird books are out there that help you identify what birds you're seeing. And so people are finding them, recognizing them, and reporting them. So I think it's a combination of several factors there.
Okay, and they're certainly enjoyable to spot.
Oh, they're dynamic birds. They're just they're great to have around. And they're comical, too, if you get them feeding on things like poison ivy berries. I mean, they'll go out there and they'll try to reach the furthest berry on the outreaching vine and hover and tumble and turn upside down. And great show to watch. And they of course, are after the berries.
There you go.
I haven't seen that yet. Would they come to a bird feeder with any particular?
No, not likely. There are rare occasions where they have come to suet and a backyard bird feeder. So, and I've seen pictures of that happening. I haven't seen it, but others have.
Carl, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Is it possible that, you know, as we try to eradicate poison ivy, that there's not enough for them to eat?
Well, why would you want to do that?
That's a good point. All right, Rich. Well, we'll take a break here, and then we'll come back with more calls. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. More with Rich Guthrie next.
Support comes from Springfield Museums, presenting modern dialect, American scene, and modernist paintings from the early 20th century through February 24th at the DeMore Museum of Fine Art. SpringfieldMuseums.org. Cafe Capriccio, featuring Chef Jim Rua's book, Cafe Capriccio's Chef's Table, online and at the Bookhouse in Albany, New York. CafeCapriccio.com. Dr. John Carpenter, providing sedation dentistry, helping to minimize and reduce multiple dental appointments. Hudson Valley Center for Sedation, 845-658-4055. And Berkshire Brochure Display, providing distribution of promotional brochures for cultural attractions and nonprofits in the Capital District and the Berkshires. Introducing visitortips.com, berkshirebrochure.com.
It's Rich Guthrie's day here on Vox Pop. We talk birds. Rich, you're heading south in February.
You betcha. It's going to be cold here. It's going to be warm where I'm going.
Where are you going?
Headed to Nicaragua.
Why?
Why? Wonderful place to visit. I've never been there. I've been to Panama and Belize and Costa Rica and Venezuela, but not to Nicaragua.
Okay.
We're going down a group out of Vermont. We'll be traveling together. And we'll be, I guess the term is homestaying.
Okay, so you'll be staying at someone's home. Do they know you're coming?
Let's hope they are, because we're going to be knocking on the door.
All right. And what do you hope to see?
Oh, the tropical birds in Central America, talk about tanagers. They've got a dozen or more species down there, plus the hummingbirds and also our native birds that spend the winter down there. So we'll see the Baltimore Orioles and the scarlet tanager and the summer tanager, as well as all the native bird species from Central America.
So you'll see some birds that make their way out of here and do their vacationing down there.
Yeah, they're way ahead of us. They're down there now. But this whole thing is it's sort of like immersion. It's a nature study area We'll be, like I say, we'll be staying individually at different people's houses down there. So yeah. It's a, you know, like really cultural immersion, as well as daily trips to some of the hot spots with guided instruction and introduction and education and sightings and the like.
Okay.
I think it's a great concept. I'm signed up for it. It's going to be happening in February. And there's still room for a few more.
Okay.
So I'm told. So you can contact me. I'll have that information at the end of the program.
Well, you have an email address, right?
Yes, I do. And that will work fine.
Okay.
It's Gaeltic. At capital.net.
How do you spell that?
Gaeltic is Gaeltic at capital.net.
All right, very good. 800-348-2551, the number. Back to the phones we go. Juanita and Pownell, you're on.
Yes, what a wonderful program.
Thank you.
I have at my feeder 4 red-bellied woodpeckers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never had them. I've been at this location for 40 years.
Uh-huh.
And I've never had them. We also have the pileated woodpecker.
Sure.
And they come to our restaurant, Peter.
Oh, well, good for you then.
Yeah, we hang a block of suet, you mm-hmm. know, just a slab of suet, run a rope through it and hang it over a branch. They love that.
I betcha. Well, you make it attractive for them. Now, as far as a red-bellied woodpecker, that's yet another one of those southern birds that have moved north.
Right.
Is that like Woody Woodpecker?
No, the pileated is more like Woody Woodpecker.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It looks. In fact, it was a prototype for Woody Woodpecker.
Okay.
And but the red-bellied woodpecker, first of all, is a bit of a misnomer.
It certainly is. But yeah. You can see that red.
No, you cannot. And
yes, you can.
You can if you happen to be in the right place at the right time. But most
if
of them.
If he hangs down from the suet feeder.
Yep.
It will show.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you got to be very observant to catch that. But more, you know, they have a black and white striped back, horizontal stripes, and
like
a brilliant
zebra.
Red cap and on the head.
Mm-hmm.
So they're another one of those southern birds that a few years ago, when I was growing up, and when you moved into your area up there in Vermont, they were not around. They were still down in New Jersey and Maryland.
Hmm.
Now they're here.
Wonderful addition.
And they have horizontal stripes?
Yes.
Do they know it makes them look fatter?
They makes them look interesting.
Okay, now Rich is pulling out the trusty bird book, and we're going to look at a picture here. For those listening on the radio, we'll be looking at a picture of a red-belly woodpecker.
Here Let's we see. Go. Listening to, there it is.
Oh, we had one of those in our neck of the woods.
They're very distinctive.
Yes, indeed.
And they do like bird feeders. They will actually go for bird seed as well as suet.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Okay.
The red-belly woodpecker.
Well, very good. Hey, Juanita, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Good thing. Thanks for the program.
All right.
Thank you very much. Let's go to John in Wilton. John, you're on.
Yes, sir. Within 25 to 30 years ago, I still live in Wilton on Northern Pines Road, and there was a trail that went behind my home before there were houses there all the way to the Northway. And the one day I was driving the trail bike down that path. I had only an opening in that path of, 30 foot between woods on the left and woods on the right, all the way to the Northway. And I heard a whoosh behind me, and I turned around on the bike, and a bird was swooping down behind me, coming out at a high rate of speed, like that former speaker was talking about. And so I had to turn my head forward, or I'd crash the bike. And it swooped down, passing over my head, of which if I had a hand in the air, I think it would have touched some part of that bird.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept going at that same straight level towards the Northway in front of me. I'm talking about, I can give you again, about 200 to 300 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then started to swoop up and go back into the woods. And that wingspan was, I think, I don't know if I told you, was between 3 and 4 feet, as I would think, or more. And could that have been an eagle? Because that's when eagles were brought back. They were starting to bring eagles back. That's the question in my mind all these years.
Well, I kind of doubt it was an eagle. It's not the habitat that you would expect to find an eagle. And
right.
Eagles are not that aggressive. So I would sort of put aside eagle for the moment. And it sounds to me like the behavior of a goshawk near its nest. And they can be very aggressive.
Wow.
And,
I was lucky. I think I was very lucky.
Well, I think so, too, because they'll crease your scalp if they get to you. We've had a trail in Thatcher Park some years ago. We had to close because there was a nesting goshawk in the area, and they were just totally would not tolerate any intruders.
Hmm. Now, how do you spell goshawk?
G-O-S, hawk.
And then hawk.
Yes,
one word. G-O-S-H-A-U-K, right, goshawk.
Okay.
Wow. I might try in the library to find what a picture looks like. And
okay.
Probably find one online, too, John.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
One time my son and I, a year or two ago, were playing, just throwing the football out on our street right in front of our house. And all of a sudden, this huge something comes straight down the street, and it's lower and lower, and it's coming at us. And I said, oh, this is it. And it flew very low, maybe 5 or 6 feet over our head, and flew on. And I just figured maybe it was attracted by the football flying. I don't know.
Well, yeah.
We're still here.
If you throw a lousy pass, it will have that fluttering quality to the football, and that might draw them in. So,
you know what? Now you're don't cast aspersions upon my football ability, Rich.
Just straighten out that pass.
I see. All right. John on Facebook asks, I have a question on the bluebird migration pattern. Are they still around the Albany area? Is it possible that several pair were checking out my bluebird houses last week? I had my binoculars out and thought for sure they were bluebirds.
And I think you're right. Bluebirds do that. So leave your bluebird nest boxes up because they will use it as a night roost through the winter. Some bluebirds migrate out of the area, but most of them stay put.
Hmm.
So you can expect to find bluebirds right on through the winter. They love those nest boxes where they'll have a little communal roost, a little shared body warmth.
Okay. Rich Guthrie is our guest. We talk birds once a month. 800-348-2551 is the number. Kelly in Pittsfield, you're up with Rich Guthrie.
Hi there. My kids got some ducks this past spring. They were only a couple days old, and four of them have flown away. We had six, and all that we have left are a male and a female who just never seem to got the knack for flying, and I'm wondering, they live outside. We were hoping they'd move into the chicken coop to keep warm for the winter, but they won't come anywhere near the chicken coop. So I'm just wondering if there's anything, you know, are they going to survive the winter outside? Is there anything I need to do or we can do to help them?
Well, it's really sort of hard to say because most wild ducks, of course, have the instinct to leave town. Hand-raised or farm-raised birds may not have that built into them. And, you know, these guys may not get smart enough to leave. So if there is a pond, there's a good chance that they'll stay in that pond. What birds will do when they're in that sort of situation is they'll swim around in a small area just to keep the ice from forming around them.
And we do have a beaver pond. That is where they are now.
Right, which will likely freeze over. So unless there's a spring hole in there, then they'll have to keep it open themselves. So that may be a cause for some concern. But I can't, you know, if they don't have it in them to move out of town, then you're going to have to, you know, they're going to be there for the winter. And you just, you know, have to hope that they can find a way into that coop or some other sheltered areas. But, you know, we do have waterfowl that do stay in the area through the winter. Some of them come in from further north and find open water, such as the Hudson or Mohawk River and Connecticut River, where they'll congregate. But when the ice forms up, they have to sort of leave town.
So temperature really not the problem. It's just as long as they have water that is not ice.
Oh, yeah. They can withstand very cold temperatures up in Messina, up in the St. Lawrence River, where there is open water, fast-moving open water.
Yeah.
The ducks will spend the winter there and be okay.
Hmm. Interesting.
Now, is there something we can feed them to help kind of sustain...
No,
you know, help them out.
No, nothing more different than I presume you're feeding them a balanced, probably a store bought diet.
Yes.
Okay, that should suffice. It's a matter of there being able to not get frozen into water. I mean, they could waddle around in the snow all winter and not have a problem. But as long as they don't spend the night, we've seen that happen with some swans that get the mute swan is not native to the area, and they don't have a strong migration instinct. And we've seen where they've gotten frozen into the river ice down on the Hudson River. And, you know, the results are not pleasant for sure.
Mm. Okay. Kelly, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
Bye. 800-348-2551, the number. Joan in Vermont. Joan, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi, Rich. I had the great good fortune a couple of years ago to have some cardinals nest outside my office window about 3 feet away. And I have some very professional photography gear and was able to really document the whole nesting process, the eggs in the nest, and then the 7 days that the two offspring stayed there, and really got the whole story and some really wild photos. So I'm basically looking for a home for these photos. I have about 100 really great ones, and a lot of people have suggested I should put together a book, and I'm thinking of taking it to schools, you know, just to pin up on the wall kind of thing. But it's just a really nice developmental theory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know what was the best thing to do with them. I'm, you know, if it's not a money-making deal, that's fine. I just want to get some exposure for them.
Well, it certainly sounds like a worthwhile endeavor. And I know a lot of people would appreciate it. I'm not quite sure that I have a pathway for you to follow on that. But what you can do is contact me on the email. And
okay. And
I'm sure there are some listeners out there that will have contacts with some sort of an educational outlet or a publishing source that can provide a suitable place for those pictures. And
that
sounds to me like a great instructional instrument for schoolrooms.
So contact you, and then you'll contact?
I'll do what I can, yes.
Okay.
And, you know, some, what do they call it? A photo montage or PowerPoint type presentation could work well.
Okay. Well, Joan, good luck with that. Thank you very much. We go to Eric in Lake George. Eric.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I live on the lake, and in the spring, I discovered an active bald eagle's nest. I've gone back and checked. Of course, they had one youngster. It fledged. But mom and dad occasionally can be seen. In fact, I saw one today on a paddle. My question is this. If I get out there in the spring with some friends, 3 or 4 or 5 kayakers, assuming we don't land on the island where the eagle is nesting, would we be stressing out the birds while they're on the nest if we just quietly looked at them, et cetera? Because I've mentioned it to some people, and they've all expressed interest in seeing the bird, but I don't want to get out there with power boats or what have you. But I thought with kayaks and just quietly paddle up and look up at the nest with binoculars, would that be doing the parents any harm at all?
Well, probably not. And I say that with a great deal of caution. The one thing is not to get too close.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, not to get out of the kayak onto the island.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep your distance where you can get into a favorable viewing place, eagles a few years ago in our area were very intolerant of disturbance. They become mm-hmm. more acclimated, accustomed to people being nearby. But they certainly will not put up with disruptive disturbance.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say yes. Find a place where you can see the eagles from a distance. Hang out there, and keep your distance. Be respectful, and you don't want to cause the eagles to get up. But we see that on the Hudson River in the spring when the eagles are nesting. We also have a lot of kayakers, and we have fishermen, anglers. That will go by right nearby the eagle. Most of the time, the folks are not even noticing. They don't even see the eagle. But mm-hmm. the eagles are watching. They pay close attention. And I've noticed that they've been staying put longer and longer. But when people go out there and harass them, then you're breaking the law. And, not you, but these people would be. And that would be a serious violation.
Okay.
But to respectfully observe them from a distance, perfectly, in my opinion, okay. So,
all right.
Okay, I appreciate the input.
Well,
thank you.
Okay, and good luck,
Eric,
with that.
I think that.
It's a great opportunity.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Okay, and we have about a minute left here, Rich, so let's take one from Twitter. Elf Gerber on Twitter asks, Phoebe nests annually in Eve. New feeder too close and discourages them in spring? Question mark. How far should I move the feeders? Berlin, New York.
Well, I don't... If you're flexible in moving the feeders further away, go ahead and do that. I don't. Yeah, the Phoebes would be a little disturbed by other birds coming into close proximity.
Yeah.
Birds don't like that close company when they're nesting. So
yeah.
I would say if you can, move the feeders away. The distance, well, it depends on the Phoebes. So give it a try. Be flexible. Be prepared to move the feeders around and go for it. Keep them both going.
All right, Rich Guthrie, you've done an amazing job. As always, your contact information one more time.
Okay, it's Gaeltic, G-A-E-L-T-I-C, at capital.net, and that's capital.net.
And let's get a plug in for the blog before we get out of here.
TimesUnion.com. Look under birding.
All right, Rich Guthrie, great job. Thanks. We will see you next time. And I apologize if you didn't make it through. I implore you next time, call very, very early, because we tend to get so many calls, we just don't get to them all. But try it again next month. Rich will be back. Support for WAMC comes from Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, a gardener's destination featuring holiday dish gardens and holiday plants, amaryllis and paper whites, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sunday, 9 to 4, storiesnursery.com. Boyden and Perron, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, boydenandperron.com. And the Albany Academy and Albany Academy for Girls, single-gender education for boys and girls for nearly 200 years, informational lunch on us session, Thursday, December 6th, albanyacademies.org. Thanks again for joining us this afternoon. Zachary Malloy was our engineer. Thanks to Christy Carton for answering the phones. The inimitable Patrick Donjus was our producer, and still is our producer for that matter. I'm Ray Graff, Moyers & Company, tomorrow at this time. On Monday, it's Medical Monday. Dr. Jennifer Michaels will be with us. Stay tuned now for a news update.